So this is one of the more exciting shiurim of the year. The opportunity to tie all sorts of divrei Torah together in Emirat Hashem, create a more meaningful and uplifting experience, Seder experience for everybody. And with the knowledge that the divrei Torah that we share this evening is not only going to be heard and enjoyed by you and perhaps your immediate family, but perhaps you'll be spending it with other in other communities, with other family and friends. And the Torah should be a chus for all of us, that we should all be zocha to enjoy the Karban Pesach and Yerushalayim together, which is the ultimate Seder. So there are certain yisodos, certain foundational ideas of the Seder. It's supposed to be experiential. There are a lot of props that are halachically mandated, but props nonetheless. It's supposed to help us achieve a certain sense of chiras, of freedom. It's supposed to help us appreciate the Chasdei Hashem, the kindness that Hashem bestows upon us every second of every day. And in turn, it's supposed to result in a tremendous sense of Avas Hashem, of love of Hashem, appreciating everything He does for us. There are lots of other ideas that can be stressed over the course of the Seder. Concepts of Emunah, faith in Hashem, Avas Yisrael, love of our fellow Jews, the fact that We're not going to get to tonight. We might do a second part next week. But Vanitzak El Hashem, right? Ultimately, what was it that secured the redemption for the Jewish people is turning, crying out to God. It's Tzaka, that moment when your back is up against the wall and you have absolutely no recourse, and the Jewish people come together. And when it says Vanitzak El Hashem, they cried out. We cried out to Hashem. It's we. As in everybody, every member of Klal Yisrael cries out. And it's interesting because not every member of Klal Yisrael was affected in the very same way. Right? Shevet Levi, for example, was not enslaved. They weren't part of Shibud Mitzrayim. Others who were able to, they were wealthy, they were able to buy their way out of taxes, and others who had other dispensations. And yet when it came to crying out, Vanitzak El Hashem, there was a unity of purpose, a unity of mission. I cannot let you suffer. I can't go to sleep knowing that you're suffering. So everybody comes together. Avas Yisrael is a very important theme as well within the context of the Seder. What does Chayrus mean? What does freedom mean to us? Whether in Tavshanai and Zion, whether in Galus, whether in 2017, whether it's another Seder, maybe the concept of freedom has changed. And the opportunity to look and explore the content, the words, the diction, the ideas of the Seder is something that we can learn from the children. Children come to the Seder and every year they've learned something new in school. They come with new vartlach and new songs and new expectations, and we should be like them. We should open up a new Haggadah perhaps, if you can find one that you don't have yet, or open up an old Haggadah and just look at it without bias. Look at it again for the first time. See what you can learn. It's like learning Chumash and Rashi, and yet every time you learn Chumash and Rashi, every year there's always something new. Perspectives on Yisurin. A person has a difficult year. I remember one year my two grandmothers, Aleihem HaShalom, had discussed spending the Leil HaSeder with them together one year. I think it only happened once. And they were comparing their own experiences in the Holocaust, in Auschwitz, to the Shibud Mitzrayim. So to be able to connect the Yisurin that we suffer or have suffered to the Yisurin that Klal Yisrael suffered historically back in Mitzrayim, knowing that each of the Yisurin, for us and for them, came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, had a distinct purpose, and that there's an opportunity for growth hidden in every one, as difficult and as far down as it may be to find. Understanding what Nisim are, what are miracles, what is nature, how does Hashem change nature, manipulate nature. Of course, nature is just another word for the operating principles that Hashem created for this world, because we're not worthy of seeing open miracles every day. But there are miracles all around us. Appreciating the Torah, Baruch HaMakom, Shenasan Torah L'Yamo Yisrael. Appreciating the opportunity that we have, Asher Bachar Banu Mikol HaAmim, that we are the Am HaNivchar. So all of these ideas are things that you can weave into your Seder at various points. But the Seder is not supposed to be, as much as children come home as they get older with various ideas and Divrei Torah and Vartlach that they write down in their notebooks or that they hear from their Rebbeim, the Leil HaSeder is not at least in my Misora and my experience, is not supposed to be a night where, you know, when kids are little, so they come home with weekly newsletters of what they've learned in school. So there's this topic, and there's this topic, and there's this topic, and then maybe there are summary questions, trigger questions to trigger their memory, right? The Seder is not supposed to be a time where you go around the table waiting for each child to share the vart that they have on that paragraph or on that phrase. It's supposed to be something that's organic. It's supposed to be integrated. You're supposed to be able to have just a free-flowing conversation about all of the themes that I mentioned and maybe a lot more that are meaningful to you that you like to talk about at your Seder table. So Rav Schechter, Shlita always says, right, they come on with gematrias, and there's some beautiful gematrias. You look in the thousands of Haggadahs that have been published, but really most of the gematrias are nice ideas. They don't really get to the sodos of the Seder. They don't get to the foundation. Maybe it's a nice way of remembering certain things. But to just try and think of how to put everything together into a Seder, to have order. That when you walk away after drinking four cups of wine, still, despite the inebriation, you'll be able to remember, this is what I took away from it. And maybe one Seder is going to be different from the next. But if there's a Seder, there's an order. I started here. I started from a process of shibud, of enslavement, and I felt like a slave. And then through the process, I saw myself becoming free this evening, and I ended off with spontaneous hallel, praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately sticking around to recite Shir Hashirim as we spoke about last week.
Talking about praising Hashem and mentioning the word Hamakom, why specifically only in the Haggadah one time is Hashem called Hamakom? Why specifically that I can actually think in our whole liturgy is Hamakom Yenachem Etchem is the only other time that Hamakom is used as Hashem's name and not Hashem in its various permutations of Hakim or whatever. Do you have an answer?
Not for now. We can discuss that maybe later, or maybe we could talk about that over Yantif. But I just want to keep it together before we get into individual questions. And it is a good one, and it's one that has many answers. It's many of the Bali, the Mefarshei HaGadah, have grappled with that question. That expression, as you point out, having been to a Levaya today of somebody who was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, who used to come, Mr. Goldblatt would sit in the back seat, back row. He'd come for Pesach to visit his sister here in Elizabeth. And I remember Rabbi Levinson introduced me to him 2 years ago after a shir that I gave, and he said, you should talk to him. He knows the answer to this question. He knows everything. He knew everything. He knew Tanakh Baal Peh, he knew Shas Baal Peh. It's amazing. And he was such an you would never know, an unassuming person sitting in the back of the shul carried with him, you know, a walking Sefer Torah. And so there's a lot to answer to that for that question. And, it fits well with the duality of the evening of Cheirus and Shibud and Hamakom for Baruch Hamakom and Hamakom Yenachem. So it's a very good question. If you're Zocha to spend Yontif the Seder with children or grandchildren, do what you can to make it not a lecture, right? Kids don't like being spoken to, but they like being engaged. So think about whatever age people you have, and if you don't have children, then how do you keep adults engaged, right? We don't like to sit through things that go on. The Seder is a very, very long experience together. So think about what can you do to engage each member on their own level. The children on their level, the children eventually will wane, fall asleep, and then you have the adults. And how do you keep the adults motivated and talking and engaged and thinking about these ideas? Maybe there's an opportunity for incentivizing participation. The Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara talks about, right, they used to give out nuts for children on the Seder night to keep them engaged. You know, I don't know that nuts nowadays is the biggest incentive, but even Chazal understand that, you know, sometimes we need a little bit extra. So think of what you can enhance your Seder with. I saw one idea of keeping the Afikomen. Make sure that the children, if your family minhag is to take the Afikomen, maybe hold on to it. Make sure that nobody takes it until later on, so that is used as a prop to re-engage, to bring them back. Maybe they're starting to get a little drowsy and you want them to stay up a little bit longer. Then you reintroduce the Afikomen, get them back into the night. And then, obviously, we're in Chutz La'aretz. I don't think anybody here is going to be spending Pesach in Eretz Yisrael. Mirat Hashem, we all will. Mashiach will come, and then we won't have to worry about two Siddurim. But if Chas V'Shalom, we are not Zochet to Mashiach, and we will not be eating Min HaZvachim or Min HaPsachim, so then we'll be here in Galus, and we'll have two Siddurim. So pace yourself. There's the first night, there's the first Seder, and there's the second Seder. And if you flame out, if you give all of the Divrei Torah that you want and all the ideas that you want to share with your family and friends, then it's going to be a very quick second Seder. Now, it has to be, because the second night is always later. And Chatzos HaLaila this year is at 12:58. So obviously, pace yourself for Magid, but have some balance. And with that, we begin. Kadesh. So Rabbi Sachs writes in his Haggadah, which even is selling very well in Lakewood, which I found very surprising. You'd think, you know, there are hashkafic differences between modern Orthodoxy and maybe those to the right. And Rabbi Sachs probably represents modern Orthodoxy par excellence, somebody who's written books on science and ethics, etc. And there were two volumes left in the Sfarim store that I was in today, which is very interesting. Now, I don't know if the people from around Lakewood go down to Lakewood and then they buy out those copies, but something tells me, I also translated Rav Zilberstein's Haggadah into English this year, I just saw. So if you're looking for that, those are fascinating if you enjoy the discussions we have on Shabbos. So we begin with Rabbi Sachs' Haggadah on Kadesh, on Kiddush. He says that we begin the Seder with the formal act of sanctifying the day, of being Mekadesh Hayom. And the Kiddush tonight, right, is really the same. You change a couple words, it's the same Kiddush you're going to say on Shvi Shel Pesach, on the seventh and eighth night of Pesach, with the exception of mentioning which day it is. It's the same as Sukkot, it's the same as Shavuos. So what exactly is unique? The uniqueness of Kiddush on Pesach night is the fact that preceding our Geula, preceding our redemption, was the opportunity that we had of Kiddush HaChodesh. HaChodesh HaZelachem, that we have the ability, in fact we're commanded, to sanctify time. HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodeshem. And that this was the very first mitzvah that Hashem gave to Klal Yisrael. Rav Pam Zatzal, the Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vadas in Brooklyn, explains that the difference between an Eved, a slave, and a Ben Chorin, somebody who's free, is not how long, the number of hours a person works. We have people in our community who at 8 o'clock at night are still at their desks. They're still slaving away, they're working. That will be me tomorrow night. Still working and doing what they need to do to earn a living, because their supervisors, their directors, their bosses, whatever it is, the CEO requires that they put in a certain amount of time. And that's what they have to do. That's their job. But that doesn't mean that they're not free. They still have the right to be free and to come home and to do other things. But free people often work long hours doing arduous tasks. And the difference lies in who controls their time. So there was a guy I once spoke to who was starting as an associate in a law firm. And very often he would sleep over in his office a couple of nights a week on a regular basis. And I asked him, you know, do you enjoy what you're doing? And he said, not really. But when I get to the bank, you know, I like to see those numbers, all those zeros. So is he free? Technically speaking, but he's really meshubad, he's enslaved to this lifestyle that where the managing partner of his big law firm controls his time. You know, and they have to make sure that they bill in certain increments, and the control is not only of his time in the office, but that impacts how much time does he have with his family, how much time does he have for learning, how much time does he have to pursue other, you know, hobbies that he might have. He's really stuck. A slave works until he or she is allowed to stop. A free person decides when to begin and when to end. And control over time is the essential difference between chayrus and shibud, between slavery and freedom. Because ultimately, what do you do with that free time? Ein lecha ben chorin kamisha alma b'torah. A person who's free has the capacity, has the time to be able to allocate it towards the pursuit of Torah and mitzvos. A person who's enslaved has to do whatever their master tells them to do. And so that is the difference between a free person and a slave. And so when we talk about being Mekadesh Zman, sanctifying time, that's something that only a free person can do, because a slave doesn't have control over their time. They can't sanctify it. They have to do whatever they're told to do. But why do we need to have Kiddush as part of the Seder? After all, as I mentioned before, it's something that we do every other night of, let's say, Shabbos, certainly every night of Yontif, with a couple of changes. And with that question, right, we've mentioned, years previously, I think I might have mentioned it last week as well, right? If we look at each of the Simanei HaSeder, each course, each staple is a sign along a roadmap. It's a roadmap. And you have this stop, and there's an exit over here, and there's an exit over there, and there's Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz. And the point is 15 steps. We said last week that 15 steps get you all the way up to Kisei HaKavod, if you've done it properly. So what makes Kiddush unique if it's the same thing that we do every other night of Yontif? How is this the first step on the process from Shibud to Cheirus? So Rav Volbi Zatzal suggests that typically we don't have the most mindful, the closest relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That we perceive Hashem as being distant. He judges us, we're afraid of Him, we don't think about Him very often if we had committed an Avera. So the Avera, the ability to commit a sin, only comes out through the fact that we're not thinking about Hashem, or we think that He's very distant and that there's not going to be a consequence to our action, right? If somebody were in front of me, I wouldn't do something to harm them. And yet, Shavisi Hashem L'negdi Tamid, we always think that Hashem is in front of us, and the only way we slip up is when we have that distance mentally. So our relationship with Hashem is expressed in Kiddush, becomes very, very personal. And this is a very meaningful part of the night. Asher b'achar banu mikol ha'amim, Hashem chose us. V'romanu mikol ha'shon v'titein lanu Hashem alakinu be'ava. Not just that He chooses us, but He gives us mitzvahs out of love. It's out of a chavivus. He likes having a relationship with us. Mo'adim l'simcha, and not just the real difficult mitzvahs, but He gives us holidays. Days on which we can rejoice about our relationship. Days that we're commanded to enjoy it with the fine food and singing in shul and davening and extra time to learn. Chagum u'zmanim l'sasana siyom chagamatzos. It says, man chayroseinu. He emancipated us. He redeemed us. Mikra koner zeichli yetzias mitzrayim. Kivanu v'charta. We repeat again. Hashem chose us. Yosana kidashta. He sanctified us. He gave us this mitzvos. Mikol ha'amu mo'ad e'kachacha b'simcha v'sasana n'chaltanu. Hashem gave us these mitzvos, these joyous days. And so we better appreciate the personal relationship that we have with Hashem, and that we celebrate that relationship. And what happens with every relationship? There are certain responsibilities. And so the mitzvos halayla emanate, they stem from that relationship that we have. And without Kiddush, without reminding ourselves, it's not something that happened a long time ago. He chose us. He continues to choose us. He continues to give us the opportunity to fulfill these mitzvos. And so that's where we have this reciprocal relationship. Asher b'achar banu mikol ha'am. And then also we want to make sure that we fulfill our own responsibilities. At the outset of the Seder on the second night, perhaps you've used those for the first night. Right? Why do we do it all again? Why can't we just say, okay, Sveika de Yomer, we're not sure which day it is, but I already went through the process. It's not like I can just imagine that I'm going to be enslaved and I'm going to be free all over again. It takes a lot of emotional energy and preparation to get ready for the first night. The second night is always, oh, I did this. These words are familiar. The experience is familiar. Unless you say, you rested a little bit on the first day of Yontif. Not as a hachana, not to prepare for Yontif, that would be forbidden. But Erev Pesach is such a busy day, you're just exhausted by the time you sit down at the Seder table the second night. Now you have Menuchas HaNefesh, you're calm, you're able to focus. But why can't we just open up a box of matzah, open up a bottle of wine, have some maror, and say, okay, we've been mekayim the mitzvos of achila, we'll have zechira, we'll talk about the Seder a little, but not the whole thing. So Rav Moshe Shapira Zatzal, who was nifter just a couple of weeks ago, and was a big, big Baal Machshava, he was a Rebbe of a lot of the big Baal HaMusar, whose ideas I've read, and I always walk away thinking, I only understand a little bit of it. And I have to come back and chazer it again and get a little bit, chip away at the iceberg a little bit more, to expose a little bit more. He had such depth. So Rav Moshe...
Is that Moshe Shapira?
I don't think so. But I'll remind me after the show, I'll check. He says that outside of Eretz Yisrael, right, we live in Galus, we live in Chutz La'aretz, he says that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is out of focus. We don't have the same connection. Right? Anybody who's ever been to Eretz Yisrael, you get there, you get to Eretz Yisrael, and you just feel like a different person. So here, we're out of focus, and so we need to repeat things until we internalize it properly, that we really connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that which they can do in one day, we need 2 days. Because there's so much stuff around us here in Galus. Number two, he says, in Emirat Hashem, with the clarity of the Geula, we'll only have to do it next. And number two, he says, the messages themselves are worth repeating. The message of freedom, especially as we find ourselves in a very, very difficult Galus. Then we move on to Orchatz. Why is Karpas part of the Seder? Right? It achieves absolutely no halachic function whatsoever. It's not a kiyum of a mitzvah. It's not, what are we doing? So he says the purpose is to prevent, right? We know that the purpose of Karpas is to prevent the food from becoming tamek. A food that should tibulo b'mashke, if you dip the food into a liquid, the liquid is a hechsher tamei. It allows the food to possibly become tamei. It ritually impure if it comes in contact with something else that's impure. So Tosfos says it's not because our hands are not clean or that we're being mikadesh the food, but rather it's only to prevent tumah, and therefore we don't make a bracha on it. But according to Tosfos, why do we still bother with this today? What's the purpose? Why is this still, as I said before, one of these signs on the road? Why is this part of the roadmap that we take towards Geula on the Seder nights? And the Mordechai says that the purpose is to maintain the minhagim that our ancestors fulfilled, who also ate chulin, regular foods, in a state of ritual purity of tahara. The Chok Yaakov says, as this answer can be applied to many other questions of the Seder night, is that the children will ask, why are we washing our hands? We never wash our hands right after Kiddush without eating hamotzi. But the shoresh, the root of the word orchatz, is rachatz, which in Aramaic means trust. Be'an arachitz, I trust in Hashem. What does emunah, what does faith and trusting have to do with washing our hands? So Rav Yaakov Meir Shechter, who's a Rosh Yeshiva of the Breslov Yeshiva in Mea Sha'arim, says that by fulfilling the minhag that was established by the Chachamim of previous generations, we demonstrate our emunas chachamim by perpetuating this minhag that they instituted, even when it doesn't really have any practical application today. It's something that we don't have to do. The Shulchan Aruch recommends we do it every day, but that's not the minhag of most people in this world. So the Chazon Ish explains the pitachon, that trust in Hashem is emuna, is faith that's put into practice. Right? Bitachon is the faith, the emuna that we have. Right? The person works on their emuna, and then bitachon means putting it into practice. So the reality of our faith and our belief in Hashem is put to the test in the reality and all the different adversity that we face on a daily basis. And by pausing the Seder right now at this point to wash our hands with Orchatz, we demonstrate that we're putting our faith that we will need to be in this situation, we need to be familiar with this halacha very, very soon. When Mashiach comes in Mirat Hashem, that the Yemuna, the faith that we have in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is that Mashiach will come, and then I'll have to put my faith into action. So I put my faith into action tonight to show Hashem I'm ready. I'm ready because I know that I'm going to have to wash my hands to prevent it from possibly becoming Tameh. So in this way, our washing has quite a bit to do with our trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After we recite Kiddush and sanctify the day after acknowledging that we're the Am HaNivchar, through Asher Bachar Banu Mikolam, through Rav Banu Mikol Hashon, so we can't accept our continued gullus and just remain complacent. How do we retain, everybody talks about it, maintaining a growth-oriented mindset today. You always want to be growing. So how do you do that? By washing our hands, by trusting in the halachic system that was instituted by Chazal, who said we should do this, so we do it, even though it has no consequence this evening. We demonstrate our emunah and bitachon that Emir Hashem will have the opportunity to put it into practice. Now, if Hashem was able to redeem us from Mitzrayim, he could do it again in the blink of an eye tomorrow morning. We move on to Karpas. As we said last week, the Karpas relates to the dipping of Yosef's Ksonas Pasim into the blood. Rashi explains that Pasim is a tunic that's Kmo Karpas v'techeles. So Rabbeinu Manoach says that Karpas is supposed to remind us of this because the coat, Yosef's coat, aroused the jealousy and the ire of his brothers because it symbolized the favorable treatment that their father Yaakov gave to Yosef. And as a result, they tried to rid themselves of their brother. They tried to even things out, and they pretended he was murdered, a process that led ultimately to Bnei Yisrael's descending to Mitzrayim and ultimately going into Galus and Shibud Mitzrayim. So we did our Karpas to remind ourselves of the hatred, the sinas achim that existed, and to remind ourselves even tonight of the downfall, the consequences of such hatred, not only for the future, right? It's not just that I might hate somebody, chas v'shalom, but it means that the consequences could be for multiple generations, right? If I teach my children, if I teach my family, if I teach my friends around me who I'm spending the Seder with, that this person, oh, I would never invite him into my house. I would never have her at my Seder. She's such a terror. Do you know what they did to me? Do you know what they didn't do for me? The kavod that they didn't give me, I'll never forgive them, right? So if that's the case, it's not just for you. You're teaching the people around you that hatred is something that's acceptable, that it's a media that you include in your life. And so like many other components of the night, there's a duality. We dip now to remember the pain, but we also dip the mara and the charoses later on, as we mentioned in Manish Tana, that symbolizes freedom. So where there's this balance, we remember the pain while we once again appreciate our freedom and express our hope for future redemption that should come very soon. While we're waiting for things to be passed around, perhaps, or maybe on the second night, I'll share with you an idea with the Haggadah that I received last Erev Pesach from Rav Chaim Marcus of Springfield, whose brother, Rav Ari Marcus, published a Haggadah that is phenomenal, and it includes such beautiful Torah, you could spend weeks or months learning it. And he writes in his Hakdama, in the introduction, that he gave the shiurim that were the crux of the content that's included in the Haggadah was given over in the summertime. And it's just beautiful, page after page. And he says as follows, there is, however, another critical message implicit in the submersion of the greens in the salt water that many often totally miss. It's one of the keys of life, and according to the Rambam, the central principle in the pursuit of the ways of God, and that is balance. The maror is dipped into the sweet charoset to offset or balance its bitterness. The bland taste of a solid, simple green is made more palatable when balanced by the flavored, wet, and relatively sophisticated liquid into which it's steeped. The abstract essence of dipping food to add moistness and flavor is attaining equilibrium through the act of harmonizing. Chazal established that through our interest-grabbing activity at the Seder, we convey to our children that to achieve true cheirus as Ovdei Hashem, they, and we obviously, must balance our diverse and often conflicting character traits that tug us in such opposite directions. Our primary job is to balance, to harmonize, and to integrate our many God-given qualities and experiences into one unique, complete, mended whole. Which is obviously either easier said than done. To have disparate interests and to be able to say everything that I have, everything that I am, the kochos and nefesh that Hashem gave me, the strengths, the talents, the whatever it might be, the drives, all of them are channeled in my service of Hashem, and this is how I do it. And that's what makes each of us unique. Right? The ability that we can have the salt, and we can have the sweet, and we can have some rough parts of our personality, and sometimes we can use that roughness also in the service of God. That's the balance that we need to achieve, and this is the moment in the Seder in which we can express that and share that with our children. You know, there might be parts of us that we don't love, but if we can smoothen them out so that they're palatable to others and that they work and are effective, and we're able to channel that not-so-nice side into something, you know what, there is some times when we need to be chutzpahdik. There's a time when we need to speak up. There's a time that we might need to be concerned about somebody else a little bit more than the average person is. All these things, sometimes there's a time and a place. Maybe it doesn't work all the time, but there's room. Salt isn't always the best thing, right? It enhances things, but it can also make us very sick. So we need to know how to balance all these competing interests. Yes. Rabbi Ari Marcus. If you like it, you can. I don't know if the Haggadah is for sale. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in stores. If you're interested, I can find out where to get it. It's really, really beautiful. We move on to Yachatz. We break the middle matzah. We wrap it in cloth to commemorate the pasuk's description of the dough. Tsuros basinlo samal shechmam. Right, that they took the dough and they put it wrapped up in their clothes as they were leaving Mitzrayim. But why was it hidden away? Rav Chaim Soloveitchik Zatzal says that the meat of the Karban Pesach had to be guarded from Tumah to maintain its Kedusha. And so therefore, the meat of the Karban Pesach was hidden until it was ready to be eaten, to preserve its Kedusha. And similarly, the Afikomen, the piece of matzah that symbolizes the Karban Pesach, is also wrapped up in a cloth and hidden away. The Gemara uses the phrase, Chotfin Matzah, so they used to grab matzah, which perhaps we spoke about this in Shabbos HaGadol, I think, last year, that's where the minhag perhaps developed of, you know, grabbing matzah from one person to another, and ultimately somebody takes and runs off with it. Right? They steal the afikomen, they take it. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach again says it's a terrible thing to teach children. Right? We talk about balance, so that's thievery, theft is not ever a good midah. You shouldn't be teaching that. But maybe in context of what we said before, if you're going to take it, at least use that drive to steal to engage children, to get them involved in the Seder. Obviously, you're not going to steal it forever, but it's something, you know, as an educational tool. So maybe we can be melamed zchus on the minhag, because the Medrash in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says that Yaakov stole Yitzchak's brachos from his brother Esav. And when did that happen? It was Pesach night, millennia ago. And that's why he brought his father the two lambs, one for the Karban Pesach, one for the Karban Chagiga. And all we're doing is we're following Yaakov Avinu's lead. So after it's snatched or hidden or taken away, whatever is your family's custom, it's important to note the next bridge, which is really, really critical, and that is giving. Only a person who's truly free is able to give, to be generous, to share of themselves. As we begin the focal point of the Seder, which is Magid, right, we begin with an invitation to those in need to come join us. So it seems like we're repetitive, right? We want to invite people to join us. We say, Kol dichved yesev yechal, kol ditzrech yesev yifsach. It sounds like we're saying twice, whoever is hungry, whoever needs a Pesach, come. Why don't you say once? Either kol dichvin or kol ditzrich, whoever needs, right? It sounds like ditzrich is probably more appropriate. If you need, whether you need food, whether you need an egg, whether you need matzah or dalad kosos or the Karban Pesach, we've got it all. We're ready. And we have an open invitation to anybody in need. So Rav Kook says that the first expression, kol dichvin, refers to somebody who's poor. And they're physically hungry. They don't have what to eat for dinner 2 weeks from tonight. A lot of people lack basic physical needs. And so we're reaching out to them, inviting them to share of what we have. The second one, kol ditzrich, that refers to there's a need that's beyond the physical. It's a need of spirituality. There's a thirst for ruchnius. And the Leil HaSeder is really one of the most practiced Jewish rituals of the year, interdenominationally. Unfortunately, that number continues to decline as we lose more and more members of Klal Yisrael to intermarriage and just apathy. People who don't even, they're not interested in practicing their Yiddishkeit and maintaining that Shalshelas HaMesorah, the connection and the link from generation to generation. But somebody who has a spiritual thirst comes in looking to how am I going to fulfill my obligation tonight? I don't have the means, but I'm thirsty, I'm hungry for it. Not for the food, but to be able to be mekayim the mitzvah. So we say, come, join us in partaking in the spiritual aspects of the evening, of joining in our tradition, our heritage, and our mesorah. We might be with people who are physically comfortable, but perhaps there's somebody who's going to be at our Seder table, who will have what to eat, but they're looking for more. And tonight, you have the opportunity to have a couple of ideas that you'll be able to share with them, Emirat Hashem, in addition to the Karvan Pesach that we'll eat together. And it fits very nicely with the comment of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon points out that the Torah links the mitzvah of eating matzah to tzedakah. When it says that Shivas Yom Tochlu Matzah, Sevayom Ashvi Atzeres LaHashem, Matzos Teochlu Shivas Yomim. So again, the repetition, which is 7 days eat matzah, and then matzah should be eaten for 7 days. Say it once. The Torah doesn't repeat words. What's the purpose of this? The Gra says that the first pasuk, Shivas Yom Tochlu Matzos, teaches us that we need to eat matzah for the duration of Pesach. The second pasuk says that we have to make sure that matzah is eaten by other people. So we have to provide them the means to be able to eat matzah on Pesach. We aren't explicitly instructed to provide others with a lulav, with an esrog, with a shofar. This is a unique mitzvah that we have to make sure that not only am I mekayim the mitzvah, and that's beyond arvus of having to make sure that you fulfill your mitzvah and I fulfill my mitzvah. The pasuk is adding an extra couple of words. Why? So in Chag HaMatzos, as we declare in Kiddush, Kadesh, Chag HaMatzos is Man Cheruseinu. It's the time of our freedom. And the Torah is teaching us that one is only free if they give to others. Right? Somebody who's not wrapped up in pain, people who are, you know, just interested in self-preservation, a slave who's going from one meal to the next, one break to the next, they can't think about being generous to others. All they care about is living, right? Till tomorrow, and then the next day, and the next day. Somebody who's in pain, somebody who's not wrapped up in themselves to share the pain, to share the need, the loneliness of others, can truly be called free. And it goes even further. Only one who can give a measure of freedom from hunger, from privation, from loneliness to others is actually free. And the more that a person gives, the more free they are. A true Ben Chorin is akin to a flame, right? A flame can give light, these light bulbs, a fire, a Havdalah candle, it can give fire and nothing, you don't lose anything. The wax, maybe the fuel gets expended. But the light itself can go and go. You don't lose anything from it. So like our reclining, our invitation to the less fortunate is an external demonstration of chayrus that if actualized and internalized, initiates us into the profound freedom of Avdus Hashem. And although we just announced that the matzah is the lechem oni, is the bread of poverty, of affliction, our invitation is really genuine. Because we are, in effect, acknowledging in our opening statement that needy guests will be welcomed as equal partners in our Seder, not just people who benefit from our generosity, but that everybody has a role to play. Everybody can share and express their ideas and their commitment and their faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tonight we all begin with struggles and adversities, only to conclude with gratitude and ecstasy. There's a lot more to say, but we'll stop there for now on that idea. Oh, wow. Manashtana, what are these questions getting at? So every Chag can be said, every Yom Tov can be said to be different, right? Rosh Hashanah has its own unique motif and its own mitzvah, and Sukkot has its own motif and mitzvos, and everything, every yontif is different. What makes us ask this question uniquely on Pesach and not on the others? And does the paragraph of Avadim Hayinu even answer the question that's posed? So the Abarbanel says that these four questions are not four questions, it's one question expressed in different ways. What do we make of the night's experience in which we switch back and forth between freedom and slavery, commemorating our people's darkest hours, and then celebrating the most incredible moments of revelation that we've ever experienced? There's no other day on the Jewish calendar in which we vacillate from one extreme to the other, especially in such a short period of time. Why don't we make up our minds and just pick, today's a day of celebration, or today's a day of commemorating the slavery and the failures of the Jewish people? As expressed in the questions of the Manashtana, we restrict ourselves to matzah, which is the bread of poverty, and tomorrow, which is the bitter herbs, both of which represent slavery, the shibud. But we also dip, and we also recline, which expresses the royalty. So tonight's mission, Chayav Adam Liras Esatzmo Ki Ilehu Yatzam Mitzrayim. We have to think that me, not just my ancestors, I'm going out tonight. We have to feel it, and we end off on a high of freedom. But the only way to be able to really appreciate the freedom that we have, right? Technically, we're all free tonight. You could say that there's really no difference between where we are right now in this very moment to where we will be in 2 weeks from now. Probably not even starting the Seder yet. But the only way to appreciate the bitterness, to really understand the shibud, is to replicate it with the foods that they ate, right? That's where the experiential comes into play. This food tastes terrible. Imagine what life must be like if even when you actually get to eat a meal, your food is just as terrible as your life is. And we have to remember the darkness that they experienced, to relive the history. And then as we remember the freedom, it's supposed to inspire us to feel thankful, to appreciate, and spontaneously break out in song. And so embedded within the interpretation of the Abarbanel is a vital rule of education that cannot be overemphasized, and that is that children have an incredible radar detector for hypocrisy. And they're especially confused by double standards by parents. They pick up on every little thing, more than what we say in terms of what we try to teach our children. They learn a lot more from what we do. And it might not even be the things that we show them that we do, it's the things that they just observe all on their own. The mannerisms, the routine, our tone, our inflection, the way we talk about others, the way we treat other people, they pick up every single nuance. And the messages that we communicate through our words and actions need to be coherent and consistent and sincere. The concepts and the mitzvos of the Seder meet these criteria, but not without the story that brings them into a harmonious and unified whole. In addition to this idea, there may be a deeper question that Rabbi Marcus asks within the conflict of the Manash Tana, according to this approach of the Abarbanel that we're discussing right now. What may be so fascinating about the Seder to children is not just the dissonance between the mitzvos that evoke slavery and those that symbolize freedom, but a much broader and universal issue. Their question underscores that while the food that we eat at the Seder is simple, it's plain, sometimes it's even bitter, the manner in which we consume it suggests splendor and dignity. We eat the maror, it's not like we go to a different table, we go to a different room that's dark, and we sit on the floor like we do on Tisha B'Av, and that's where we eat the maror. We eat the maror at the same table that's ornate, it's beautifully decorated with the lights on, we're wearing our yontif clothes, we might not lean for it. And so the question framed as such becomes an issue long debated by philosophers. Is man what he eats, or is man what he does? Or in the words, is a man defined by the sum total of his actions or the composite of the foods that he consumes? And so within the framework of Manash Tana, this problem becomes an inquiry into our most basic religious nature. Are we essentially lowly slaves or noble menschen? And interpreted this way, Manash Tana actually contains a profound insight into the Torah's ideal for man. What on the surface appears to be a contradiction actually contains a teaching that's fundamental to living an ideal Jewish life. The passage accentuates the importance of balance, particularly between the self-effacement and self-importance. Rav Simcha Bonhoeffer of Peshitzka would often point out that every person needs to keep, right, two notes in their pocket. This is a famous idea. Bishvili nivra ha'olam, that the world, Hashem created everything in the world. Every single thing is really for me. I might not be able to connect or understand why Hashem made something in Honolulu. I've never been there, but there's something there for me. But also, I need offer ve'efer. I'm dust and ashes. I'm nothing. And so the key to life, said Rav Simcha Bonhoeffer, is knowing when to pull out which note. When is it appropriate? Do you celebrate the godless Adam, the grandeur, the majesty of mankind, or do you take out the shiflos ha'adam and remind ourselves that we're low? A person who believes that he has nothing to offer will never reach their potential, nor will they fulfill their obligation to either HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Hashem, or to man. And a person who thinks that they have much to offer everyone is likely to be intolerant, and not able to tolerate really anybody else, because they just have this delusion of grandeur of themselves. And so humility, which is granted much significance by the Torah, requires a person to honestly assess his or her talents and capabilities and realize that they bestow upon him not greater entitlement, but actually greater responsibility. The four mitzvos of Manash Tana are neatly aligned as modest consumption versus regal bearing to convey precisely this message, which is not an inconsistency, but an instruction. I think we'll hold off for tonight and we'll reconvene in Eretz Hashem next Tuesday evening.